This is program C1147. We're in the book of Revelation, chapter number 20 now. We're going to start in verse 4 later in the program. But first we need to tie up some loose ends from what I started yesterday, which is a discussion or a description of this river of the water of life that is flowing from the Temple Mount into the newly formed valley east of the city of Jerusalem. This Har-Megiddon, this mountain of splitting that was the site of the final battle when Jesus comes against the beast leader, his false prophet, and the dragon. And we were working in the book of Zechariah to help us with this, because Zechariah has some interesting things to say about this final battle. Zechariah 14:5, the second part of that verse, says, "Then Yahweh, then the Lord, my God, will come, and all the holy ones with him." And I shared with you my belief that that is a parallel passage to Revelation chapter number 19, verse number 14, which says that the armies in heaven were following Jesus upon white horses, having been clothed in clean white linen. So they are arriving in chapter 19 for the Battle of Armageddon. And the same, I believe, is true here in Zechariah 14:5b. Verses 6 and 7 describe, in very brief terms, that battle. "In that day there will be no light, the luminaries will dwindle, for it will be a unique day which is known to Yahweh, neither day nor night, but it will come about that at evening time there will be light." So the Battle of Armageddon is finished in one day's time easily. As we described from the book of Revelation yesterday, Satan is grabbed by one of God's angels, and he is bound and thrown into the abyssus, into the bottomless pit. He and apparently all his fallen angels are interred there for the next 1,000 years. And we'll be talking about the millennium today and for the next several days. Then we also read in chapter 19 that the false prophet and the beast leader are both grabbed and thrown alive into the lake of fire, which is burning with brimstone. And this is the first time that anyone is tossed into what is known elsewhere as hell, into the eternal place of torment that was designed specifically for the permanent penitential housing facility for Satan and his rebel angels. They will be thrown there after the millennium is finished. And we'll talk more about that when we get into that part of the book of Revelation. So we now have pretty much all of the bad major actors dealt with, because all of those who have taken the Mark of the Beast have now been eradicated. The last ones were killed by the sword coming out of Jesus' mouth on the day of the Battle of Armageddon. And we are told that their bodies were then immediately scavenged by the scavenger birds. I speculated with you at the close yesterday that the remainder of the mess in the valley of Armageddon, the split valley east of Jerusalem at that time, will be washed clean by the beginning of the rivers of the water of life. Zechariah 14:8 describes it in this fashion. In that day, living waters will flow out of Jerusalem, half of them toward the Eastern Sea. That's a description of the Dead Sea that we know today. And the other half toward the Western Sea, that is the Mediterranean. It will be in summer as in winter, meaning this will be a constant running river. It will not be affected by any dry season. It will just constantly be on tap, full force. And then verse 9 says, "And Yahweh will be the king over all the earth. In that day, Yahweh will be the only one, and his name the only one." And we'll see in a moment that is specifically Yehoshua, Jesus the Son, who is fulfilling that passage, who is ruling as King of Kings and Lord of Lords in the new heaven and the new earth. Now, Zechariah gives a little bit more of the changes that take place as the new heaven and new earth come into existence at the second coming of Jesus, which we described yesterday. He says, "All the land will be changed into a plain." We might use the word plateau, so a relatively flat area. "From Geba," which is just a few miles north of the current city of Jerusalem, "to Rimmon," south of Jerusalem. And nobody knows for sure where Rimmon is. My guess is that it must be somewhere down toward or past Bethlehem. And so that whole area is going to become a flat, raised plateau region in the new heaven and new earth. Continuing in verse 10, "But Jerusalem," or the site of Jerusalem, "will rise and remain on its site from Benjamin's gate as far as the place of the first gate to the corner gate, and from the tower of Hananel to the king's wine presses. People will live in it, and there will be no longer a curse, for Jerusalem will dwell in security." So we now have not the new Jerusalem, because that comes later, but a newer Jerusalem than what currently exists. This Jerusalem, I believe, and it's only my opinion, I give it to you as I often do as speculation, I believe that God will bring into existence a new city to serve as Jesus' millennial capital. I am not altogether convinced that it will take the form of the Jerusalem described in Ezekiel chapters 40 through 47, but it is possible. I will make this caveat. That city was intended to be rebuilt by the Israelis coming back from Babylon, but they did not do so. So they missed out on some of the blessings that could have come from that. That city has descriptions with it about a sacrificial system that is in place. There will be no sacrificial system in the millennium, because Jesus, as the book of Hebrews makes very, very clear, is the final sacrifice for sin. There is no other need for a sacrifice thereafter. I know that there are some people that teach that sacrifices in the millennial period will look backward toward Jesus' sacrifice symbolically. I reject that thinking, because I believe the millennial passages that we will go over in the next few days indicate that the millennium will be a period of life, not death, and that there will be no eating of meat, that we will all go back to God's original design of being absolute vegetarians. And the book of Ezekiel actually describes the eating of meat in that temple and city described there. If you've got questions or comments, feedback about all of that, check the notes and then get with me, and I would be more than happy to kind of go back and forth on that as to why I take the stand that the Ezekiel passage was offered to Israel and they did not follow through with it to build that temple and city that could have changed a lot of the events that we think of now in connection with the atonement. All right, so I told you as you closed up yesterday, I wanted you to kind of use your own notes, use your own Bible resources to find a couple of other places that talk about this river of life. Joel chapter 3, verse 18 should have been one of the places you come across. It's referring to the day of Yahweh and the aftermath of that day of Yahweh. And it says this, Joel 3, 18, "In that day, the mountains will drip with sweet wine, and the hills will flow with milk, and the brooks of Judah will flow with water." Those are all descriptors of a very prosperous land. So if we're living in the new heaven and new earth, it's going to be very prosperous in the region of Jerusalem and Judea and the ancient area known as the Promised Land, all right? And then here comes the reference. "And a spring will go out from the house of Yahweh to water the valley of Shittim." Shittim is the Hebrew word for acacia trees. It happens to be another name for the Jordan Valley immediately north of the Dead Sea. And so this river will flow out of the Temple Mount, go through the split valley, and down into the Dead Sea Valley. And then verse 20 in Joel 3, by the way, says, "Judah will be inhabited forever and Jerusalem for all generations." And so I think that this is clearly one of our millennial passages, the kickoff to the millennium. The other place that you should have found is in the book we already referenced, Ezekiel chapter 47. And this is the part that will eventually be tied into the book of Revelation about the coming of the New Jerusalem. And I think what's going to happen is that New Jerusalem is going to settle right on top of the place where millennial Jerusalem is located and where the river of water of life has already been flowing for 1,000 years. But Ezekiel chapter 47 describes, the prophet describes this river. Let me just read some highlights to it. Chapter 47, verse 1, "He brought me back to the door of the house," meaning the temple, "and behold, water was flowing from under the threshold of the house toward the east, for the house faced east. And the water was flowing down from under, from the right side of the house, from south of the altar." So right there on the modern Temple Mount is where this fountain is going to break out. "Behold, water was trickling from the south side. When the man, by the way, is probably an angel that's showing these things to Ezekiel. "When the man went out toward the east with a line in his hand, he measured 1,000 cubits, which would be roughly 1,500 feet. All right, 1,500 feet. He led me through the water reaching the ankles." So that's all the deeper it is, 1,500 feet from where it springs up. "Again, he measured 1,000 feet, so that's 1,000 cubits, so that's 3,000 feet cumulatively. "And he led me through the water reaching the knees." So it's getting deeper the farther east it flows. Again, he measured 1,000 and led me through the water, reaching the loins, and again 1,000, and it was water that I could not ford, meaning he could not keep his foot or his footing upon the bottom of this river. So this is about 1.15 miles east of the Temple Mount by now. And that would be right where the Mount of Olives is right now, which would mean it would be in the midst of this new valley that Zechariah describes. By this time, it's a river that is swimmable. Verse 6, he said to me, "Son of man, have you seen this?" And then he brought me back to the bank of the river. "Now when I had returned, behold, on the bank of the river, there were very many trees on the one side and on the other." Verse 8, then he said to me, "These waters go out toward the eastern region, down into the Arabah." The Arabah is the ancient word for the dry desert area where the Jordan Valley and the Dead Sea are. Then they go toward the sea, being made to flow into the sea, and the waters of the sea become fresh. And it will come about that every living creature that swarms in every place where the river goes will live, and there will be many fish, for these waters go there, and the others become fresh, so everything will live where the water goes. And then it starts talking about people fishing, which I believe is tied in to this being offered as a potential to the people coming back from Babylonian captivity. But they did not build the temple as described here. They did not build the city as described here. And therefore, they did not see the coming of the Lord's Spirit into that temple. They did not see the coming of the water of life or the tree of life or any of those things. And so things have played out differently than they could have. And so I don't believe that there will be any fishing for eating going on in the millennial period. But here we see that river that I think matches the Zechariah passage as well as the Book of Revelation passage. So this is the beginning then of the millennial period, when you have people coming to Jerusalem as the capital of this new world. And now, let's shift our attention over to those ideas. I'm looking at page 98 in my notes right now. The heading that I put here is the Millennium, and then a subheading, the Administration of the Surviving Mortals. This becomes a very strange topic, but a topic we have to tackle nonetheless. And that is, we know that everybody who voluntarily took the mark of the beast are dead and gone by the time that the millennium starts. We know that all the saints of the ancient times, as well as those saints living in the time that Jesus returns, those who name the name, those who have shown faithful commitment to God already, those people have been resurrected and transformed into their immortal bodies. So they are static. They are solidified in that situation. They will never abandon Jesus again. So here's the deal, folks. We know that at the end of the millennium, there are people who chose to go against Jesus and those that chose to stay with Jesus. And the question has to be, who are these people? They must be mortals who have not yet made any choice about Jesus personally. And they did not take the mark of the beast either, or they would have already been dead. So we have to identify these guys. Now, they are hinted at in a couple of Old Testament passages. First, Daniel chapter 7, verse number 12, where we are seeing a description of the beast government and how he's made up of all these previous beast governments. And of course, beast governments have people within them. And it describes it this way: as for the rest of the beasts, their rule was transferred and an extension of life was given to them until the appropriate time. So I think that hints at the idea that there will be people living in the millennium who have either survived the 3.5 years or have come from some other time to this period of 1,000 years to make up their mind. Will they or will they not serve Jesus? Now, what about Jesus? Revelation 19:15 says that he will shepherd them with an iron rod. And that's actually taken straight from Psalm 2, verse 9. Jesus does not shepherd his immortals, those who have already bent the knee voluntarily, with an iron rod. An iron rod stands for administrative justice, dealing with people who may not be always compliant. So Jesus, during his 1,000 years, will be reigning over people that need a strong hand. Now, we've also got a couple of hints from the books of Matthew chapter 19, verse 28, and Luke 22, 28 through 30, that Jesus will be using his 12 apostles during this millennial period to do some administrative judgment of such people, people who are specifically Israelis. So Matthew chapter 19, verse 28 says, in the restoration, so that's after the resurrection, whenever the Son of Man sits upon the throne of his glory, you, meaning the apostles, who have been following me, will yourselves sit upon 12 thrones, judging or administering the 12 tribes of Israel. Luke 22, verses 28 and following is a parallel. You are those who have remained with me during my tests. Even as my Father appointed me a kingdom, I am appointing you to eat and drink with me at my table in the kingdom. You will also sit upon 12 thrones, judging the tribes of Israel. So we know the apostles, and that would be Matthias, not Judas the betrayer. The 12 apostles will be serving as administrators of Israelis in the millennial period. Now, who are those Israelis? I think some of them will be those who survived through the 3.5 year period as part of the leadership skills of the two witnesses. I think that's a possibility. I also bring to your mind that in any generation, a very large portion of the population is made up of minor children. And so I think many of them may be part of the mortals living in the millennial period that will be administered. But I will throw this out as well. And you can chew on it as you wish. I think God puts a very high premium upon free will choice. And so I believe that he will resurrect every person going back to the beginning of time that he does not believe had a free will opportunity to choose right and choose him and give them the 1,000-year period to make their choice. So that's my opinion. And again, as I often say to you, it's only worth what you're paying me for it. So go ahead and think about it. Don't immediately make a decision. Just kind of chew on it. And keep in mind that we know there will be many mortals during the thousand-year period that have not yet made their minds up about Jesus. So they have to come from somewhere. So I suggest to you, it may be a lot of people from the past who didn't have that clear choice will be brought back and given the opportunity. Now, Revelation chapter 20, verse 4, and we're almost out of time, so this is kind of where we're going to set up for tomorrow. Revelation 20, verse 4 says, I saw thrones, they sat upon them, and judgment was given to them. Now, who are these people? I think that's clearly the 12 apostles plus a bunch of other people. We know that there were 24 total thrones at the beginning of the book of Revelation. But it's not just them. Keep reading. The individuals beheaded due to their testimony about Jesus and the Word of God, those who did not worship the beast or his image, who refused to take the mark upon their forehead or upon their hand, these came to life and ruled with Christ 1,000 years. Now, I think that's everybody that has faith will be resurrected at the same time, but John specifies particularly the martyrs of the 3.5-year period will be resurrected, and these are going to rule and reign with Christ for 1,000 years. So I believe all of us who will be resurrected and transformed will be part of those immortals who will be helping administer the mortals who have not yet made their minds up. I think that's how we will spend our 1,000 years with Jesus. And that is an interesting prospect, isn't it? Now, tomorrow, we will pick up this idea of the millennium and start looking at some of the passages that talk about what it will be like.